This is an uncensored podcast about sex, sexuality, gender, and body stuff. Listener discretion is advised. The views and opinions expressed in this podcast are solely those of the person or persons sharing them. Some names have been changed to protect the anonymity of its participants. Hello. Hi, friends. Welcome back to Make Sex With Me. I'm your host, Drew Michael, and I am back again in the pod loft after having eaten mashed potatoes, gravy, meatloaf, and some kind of like Pillsbury dough rolls or something that my parents made. And I have to say, I'm feeling a little bit, apparently sleepy, but I'm also feeling a little bit, bloated and a little bit farty. Like, I don't think that the standard American diet is, doing me any favors. Anyway, let me bore you some more. This is not a podcast about Pillsbury dinner rolls. This is a podcast about putting your finger in yourself or in someone else or their fingers in you and then licking your fingers and being like, yeah, that's what it's, I just gross myself out. Of course, with consent, all of that. No fingering without consent. Also, I don't know why I said any of that. I actually hate to be fingered. There's, you know, honestly, if you could remove the fingernails, I would love it. But otherwise, it's too many fingernails. I'm going to try to, like, not sniff too much or say too much. That's what I'm going to try to do for you guys. This is a podcast about, this is an episode without any guests today, this week. It'll just be me. And you know what? I need to be okay with that. I do. I have some really exciting people that I've interviewed and that I'm going to be interviewing very soon, very shortly. And, I cannot wait to have them on the show. Some really good, exciting things are happening for 2023, but I'll tell you that I am actually, sniffed and ummed. I'm actually, that's like one of my things that I really want to push myself to do in 2023 is like, find talent, just like really reach out. Like today I asked a friend who I've known for a long time and who I haven't spoken to in a while, like if she would feel comfortable talking about her polyamorous relationship, that I just realized she had. And so we might have her on. But I want to make sure she feels comfortable with it. And I don't want her to feel like I'm using her for anything. But, you know, it's so funny because, like, obviously, like, I need to have guests on the show. But, you know, there's always this feeling of, like, am I using a person? Or do they feel used? And the fact is like, I'm not forcing anyone to tell their story. But, you know, I am a storyteller. I am inviting people to be storytellers with me. And I think it's really important work we're doing here. I don't think that, what's the word? I don't think I'm exploiting anybody. I just feel like I want to be really true to them and their story. Like, I don't do a lot of editing when I record, or after I record. I just, like, let it, the truth kind of come out and shine. And, you know, I take some things out. Because, I mean, and you guys might not believe this, but I burp and fart way more than you know about. Like, you think that, like, oh, he totally farted on that recording and didn't edit it out. He just is so gross. But you don't even know the half of it. I probably took out 6 or 7 farts and left that one by accident. So there's that. There is that. It's kind of like when you make Pillsbury dinner rolls and while you're, you know, preparing the dough, you take a hair out of your head and just shove it into one of them so that someone can have a little bit of your hair in their roll. Just kidding. Or maybe, like, you say to everyone, you guys, one of these rolls has a little bit of my hair in it. So before you eat it, I want to just make sure you all know and consent to having a hairy roll in your mouth. I'm going to edit that out. I hate myself for saying any of that. I don't think I'm funny anymore. I think I was funny. You know what? I drank a lot last night. I think I'm funny when I'm drunk. The next day when I'm hungover, I don't think I'm that funny. Which is weird because I'm really funny when I'm tired. But apparently I'm not that funny when my brain is like, ouch, you drank a lot last night. So anyway, just a reminder, if you haven't yet, please rate, review, subscribe to the podcast, you guys. It would be so helpful. It literally is the only thing keeping blood in our veins at this point. Please do so. And, you know, if you guys want to write in to the podcast, you can do so by emailing us at makesexwithmepodcast@gmail.com. You know, you don't have to, you can be anonymous. You can just write in and say, like, hey, my name is, oh, make up a name. How much more fun? How, it's like, you could literally, it could be like your online Sims character or whatever. Like, just make up a name, write in. Even, you know, I would like the story you tell me to be, like, true, but, like, even if it's not, like, whatever. You know, just make up erotic fan fiction. I could be one of the characters. I know someone out there is masturbating to this, and I want to know about it. Please write in. what? So, I think for this week, we're just gonna, like, get some shit out there, and I want to do that, like, I want there to be a little shift in the vibe. So, like, let's get our sponsor ad out of the way, and then we'll come back, and we'll talk about what I want to talk about this week. All right? Be right back! All right, we're back. So, how have you guys been? What'd you do over the last 3 minutes? Did you listen to the ad? Did you make something to eat? What are you wearing? Are you sniffing a lot? Can I start by saying there's this new thing out there, and actually it's like, it's not even one thing, it's like a drug. It's called Flocka, and I've been talking to people about this. I just listened to a podcast out of Britain, which it's the Red Handed podcast, and they did a short episode about this drug Flocka, which is also called $5 Insanity, which is also sometimes called Spice, which is also is related to bath salts. And we all know about bath salts. Bath salts was there that, like, everyone in Florida was, like, eating each other's faces off whenever they were on this drug. And they were, like, so superhero strength. When, like, the cops would show up, they'd, like, start tasing them, and the person would, like, have zero reaction to being tased. It was basically like they were zombies. So these drugs are out there, and I'm kind of scared because, like, I'm pretty pro-drug, but these drugs are all, like, synthetic, and they're, like, I feel like they're being made to hurt people. I think they're really cheap to make. I think, like, they sound like a lot of fun. I think they're really hard to regulate, and they're really hard to know, like, have you taken too much? I think if you take, like, a little bit, maybe it's enjoyable, but I can't imagine. I don't personally think that a lot of drugs would be enjoyable. That's why I don't do them, other than, like, Lexapro, which is actually not enjoyable at all. Xanax is very enjoyable, but I don't take it a lot. It turns out if you do too much Xanax, I don't know, holes in your brain or something, but I don't do too much. But I barely take Advil, to be honest. I'm kind of a pussy when it comes, oh, you shouldn't say that. Okay. Basically, though, you guys, Flocka is no fucking joke. And it's like I said, it's not one thing. It keeps changing, but it is this, like, synthetic drug, and it's, like, really, really intense. And, like, people are, like, doing it by mistake. They'll, like, smoke some weed and not realize it was, like, laced with Flocka. And then they'll, like, fucking kill their whole family. And then, like, later on be like, I don't know what happened. I just thought that my family were, like, demons from hell and they were trying to kill me and they were asking me to kill them. So I killed them. And then later on I was, like, running around the streets screaming, I am God. And I had, like, blood dripping from my fingertips. And it was, like, my family's blood. Oh, that's very morbid. I don't think this is that podcast. Okay. So, drugs, yes. We might take that whole section out. Oh, sorry, drugs, no. We still might take that whole section out. Certainly, though, like, I think that if more states would legalize things like marijuana and other drugs that are actually, like, being found to, like, be super awesome for dealing with depression and anxiety, like LSD, like psilocybin, like mescaline, which is in peyote, right? All of these things, like, when used the right way with, I would want to use it with, like, some kind of, like, clinical supervision. But, like, even if you're just, like, microdosing or you just, like, have some kind of a spirit guide who, like, knows how to, like, dose people the proper way, these things could be really, really wonderful for, like, relieving you of, like, a lot of mental discomfort and illness. So these kinds of things need to be legalized. They need to be able to be regulated. And honestly, by making drugs illegal, it's kind of just, like, keeping power in the hands of, like, the wrong people who are going to be able to get those drugs out to other people regardless of it being legal or illegal. But, like, it kind of puts all those illegal dealers out of business if suddenly it's legal and their main competitor is, like, the fucking government. Or I don't know who's distributing pot in states where the pot is legal. I don't know if it's, like, government, all government or what, but, like, it is being regulated by the government. And I think that's, like, exactly what we need. So I feel like if I bought pot from a dispensary in a state where pot is legal, it would not be laced with flaca. So there's that. All right. Let me get off my soapbox and tell you a little story, and then I'll get right back on top of my soapbox. All right, so this week I want to talk to you guys about something that is, that happened to me, recently. And it was at work, and, you know, I'm always kind of, now I'm a little bit weary always to, like, talk about things work-related because I did some kind of an Instagram post or an Instagram live or something, and this was like it must have been like 6 months ago or more, and I was talking about a man who was a member at the gym I worked at, and I was, like, very vague about how I knew him, but I did mention that he was a, I don't know what I said. I don't know. I feel like I might have mentioned that he was a member at the place I worked or something. I was kind of stupid, but I mentioned it by name because he was running for public office in, you know, the school district, in the town I live in. And he was being fucking racist. And I basically called him a racist. And I said, at the very least, he's a micro racist. And I just was like, blah, blah, blah. And then because my Instagram was linked to Facebook, and a lot of you that listen to this podcast a lot know about this, but because I'll just fill you in if you're like, what are you talking about? Because my Instagram was linked to Facebook, a lot of people heard about it that I wasn't really thinking would hear about it because, you know, Facebook tends to have, like, suburban fucking moms and shit, like, people that live around here where I live now, but, like, I feel like my Instagram is more full of, like, people from big cities and, like, people I went to college with and people who aren't fucking petty and ignorant and stupid as fuck. And a lot of my Facebook people are not those types either, but then there are some. And a lot of these people who would just, you know, cry out loud constantly about their, like, right to bear arms and their fucking right to free speech and shit. But the minute you say something they don't like, they try to get you fired. And it's like, okay, well, fuck you. So there was definitely some people that I don't work with who reported me to HR at that last place I worked at. And there were some people I do work with that reported me to HR also. And to whomever I work with who reported me to HR, a special fuck you to you. And I hope you have a hard time sleeping at night. Thank you so much. That's the worst threat I will pass because I'm a, what is it called? I'm a pacifist. Something like that. I am a, I don't like violence. I don't believe in it. But you come from my mother and I will fuck it. No, I'm kidding. So yeah, I, that was really shitty and a lot of people know about it, but that's not the point. The point is I'm really considering getting rid of Facebook because I just feel like I don't want to fucking look at pictures of your kids on their first day of school. I don't want to fucking look at pictures of, you, the cupcakes you ate when you went to, you know, Augusta this weekend. Like, I don't, I was just realizing the other day that, like, we were not meant to see so much of everyone else's life all the time. We were not meant to see that. And it makes me, it makes me mentally ill to see what everyone else is doing all the time. I don't need to, I just need to be doing what I'm doing. And I need to be seeing what, like, the people I fucking care about are doing. And, like, I guess the fear of getting rid of Facebook is that, like, you're like, oh my God, I need to keep in touch with friends and family. And like, oh, remember so-and-so that I went to high school with, I really miss them and I like them. And I want to see what their baby looks like now. And it's like, if you wanted to see their fucking baby, you would go see their fucking baby. You know, I don't need to see their baby pictures on Facebook. Like, I haven't seen this person in 20 years and it's, there's reasons for that. And it's because I've moved on and so have they. Like, I don't need to keep in touch with these people. And it angers me so much that Facebook, which I really don't even use very much, it makes me so mad that that's what got me found out about. And that's why, like, I feel like it's weird to ever talk about my job, but I work so fucking much and I have so many things I want to complain about and talk about, and I feel like I could be fired for any of that. But I do know that I have certain rights. And actually, in the state of South Carolina, people might not have that many rights, but one thing they do have the right to do is publicly complain about their job without fear of getting fired. And so I'm going to do that a little bit, but it's not really complaining. It's more like, I want to tell you some stuff. And this actually, my issues with within this story have nothing to do with where I work. And I feel like I can even say where I work now because I think it's public knowledge. What I work for the YMCA, and they are a Christian organization. Their whole motto thing is like, we're trying to like do our best to like follow Christian, you know, values and, you know, instill Christian values in everything we do. And I think that there's a lot to be said there. That's kind of vague too. Like, you know, there's definitely Christians who don't do the right thing a lot of the time. And then there's some Christians who are really awesome people. And I am personally not one of them, either of those groups. I'm not a Christian. I don't know what I am, but I'm not Christian. I'm not Jewish. I'm not Muslim. I want to be witchier, but I don't really have the energy to do that. I'm really just a person who doesn't believe in organized religion, but I also believe in being a good person and being good to people. And a lot of the things that I learned about being a good person came from, you know, being raised Christian. I was raised Catholic, actually. And I will say that there are some very good Catholics. Some. I don't know how many, but some. More often than not, I will say that Catholics are flawed. And then there's some terrible fucking Catholics. and I won't say how many, probably more good Catholics than terrible fucking Catholics, but the greatest majority is just flawed because they're human. And also because some of the things they're striving to be or be like is unattainable or silly or whatever, you know. But anyway, so I can get down with the why being Christian. I'm like, cool, yeah. And honestly, a lot of the policies I really like, I've been finding that since working for the Y, a lot of the policies are really fair and they really even out the playing field. Like they like to give opportunities to all sorts of people. They might, you know, there might be a lot of places where rich people get a lot more benefits than poor people, but at the YMCA, we strive to give opportunities to all people, whether you're rich or poor, whether you're Black or white or Latin or Asian, whether you are a single person or a married person, whether you have children or not, whether you're old or young. Like, we really try, like, the why, they always say the why is for all. That's one of our mottos, and this is by no means a commercial for the why. Now, I will say that the why has been around for like 200 some years or something. It's a thing. And have they always done things the right way or like good Christians? No, but I think they always meant to, but I think people change obviously and things have gotten better and better. And in a lot of ways they've learned by their mistakes. And I would say that in the history of the Y, there's been a lot of things that have happened. And, like, those kinds of things are on par with, like, things that have happened in the Catholic Church or things that have happened in the Boy Scouts. The difference being that I think the Y has taken some pretty strong actions towards changing their ways and making sure that bad things that have happened in the past no longer happen. And one of the biggest things that the Y is about is protecting children and young people, and really all people, but mostly young people and children from different kinds of abuse, whether it be sexual or physical or verbal. Like, just like, this is a safe place for families, a safe place for children, and we have to do everything in our power as employees of the Y to protect them. And so I'm on board with all of that. Like, that all sounds great. One thing that we do, and I do think this is public knowledge, is we do run everyone through a sex offenders database. So if you've ever been convicted of a sexual crime, you cannot go to any YMCA in like the world. And the fact is that their goal is to protect children. So we can't take a risk. We can't take a risk of having someone who's done something bad to a young person. We can't take the risk of having you be on our premises and hurting someone that we are protecting. So I get all of that. That's great. The weird thing is that this week, all of what I'm talking about was no longer just on paper. This week I was working and a man came in and he was like an older man. He had a walker. He was pretty nice. He just, you know, seemed like he just was really out of shape and was really looking to get, you know, into the pool because his body hurt and he needed to do some like aqua aerobics or whatever. I was like, okay, cool. And he said, can you show me around? I'd like to see the place. And he had, you know, he'd shown me that he had Medicare that would cover the cost of his enrollment and everything and his membership. And I was like, well, this is great for you. Awesome. And I literally do this every day. I help people get memberships. I help older people that have Medicare cover the costs of their memberships. I introduce them to new and exciting opportunities for their health and wellness. You know, like, I do this all day long and I don't receive a commission. I receive a paycheck, and I also do it because I think I'm doing good work. And so anyway, I show this guy around. He is he wants me to, he makes sure that I show him the locker. And let's just say that a lot of people say, do you have lockers? They're not all sex offenders, but he wanted to know if I would show him the lockers. And I did. And, you know, I was like, here's where the showers are. Here's the locker room. Here's the steam room. Here's the toilets. Like, here's a wall. Here's a sink, whatever. Showed him the pool. And then, you know, we went back through the locker room to get back out to the lobby, and he was, I don't know, I thought he was a little bit, like, he didn't follow me. I went to walk through where, like, the sinks were, and he started walking the other way around to where the lockers were, and I was like, oh, okay, I guess we'll walk that way. And I am also, like, you know, I don't usually walk people through where the lockers are, because, there a lot of times there'll be people changing there, and I'm like, okay, I'm giving a tour, I'm like giving completely clothed people a tour of a locker room where people might be naked, so I don't want to make anyone feel uncomfortable. I'm going to take them a route that's not going to be like, look, a naked person, and this is our this is where you put your wet bathing suit to dry it, and here's a scrotum, you know, like, I'm not trying to make anyone feel uncomfortable. Also, it's weird to be the only naked person in a room. Let's be honest. People have nightmares about that. So it's like, yeah, I'm going to... But anyway, he wanted to go the locker route. And I don't think there was even anyone changing. But I was like, okay, whatever, we'll go this way. And then I took him out to the lobby. And, you know, I said, like, do you have your driver's license? He was like, yep, I do. And it's weird. I do remember he started telling me a story as he was taking his license out. And I can't remember what that story was. But then he did also say to me, you know, the last time I went to a YMCA, nobody was wearing any clothes. And I was like, oh, yeah, okay. And I was like, when was that? Probably not recently, right? And I said, that was probably when it was all guys. And he was like, yeah, Young Men's Christian Association. And I was like, yeah, I know. Like, I know. I know that it used to be all men. And I also know that it used to be, not everywhere, but a lot of places they did do a lot of things naked, and that's very shocking for a lot of people to hear, but there weren't the same amount of taboos around nudity, at the time, and it was all men, so there was no one to offend, you know, and according to them, and there was a lot of nakedness with men and boys, and, you know, you could say that is, you know, a breeding ground for grooming and sexual abuse, and, you know, I'm assuming that there was just a lot going wrong back then. There was, like, I feel like back then nobody was thinking that there would be men who would be sexual predators of, like, young boys. Like, there was things that weren't even in the mind of people back then. And I think that they would have been like, there's nothing wrong with this. And inherently, there's nothing wrong with a bunch of people being naked, you know? Like, if you look at nudist families, there's little kids, there's teenagers, there's 20-somethings, there's moms and dads and, you know, older ages, there's grandparents, and they can all just be naked, and it's not sexual, no one's being abused, no one's being hurt. Nudity in itself is not the problem. But there is a problem when a person with intentions that are not good enters into a scenario like that. And most people, I want to say, don't have bad intentions, but some people do. And some of those people do because they're sick, you know? And so let me continue with my story. So this guy pulls out his ID and I start putting him in, and then I run him through the sex offenders database. And then it comes up a positive. He is in there, and it's his name, it's his address, it's his face. There's two different pictures from two different things. I'm not sure what they both were, because it didn't tell me that much information. But I realize that I now am supposed to do something about this, because I can't let him come in because it's my responsibility to keep, you know, everyone in the building safe. And it's not like he's going to whip out an AR-15 and shoot everybody. But if there are young people in the building, you know, I don't know what this man did to get on the sex offenders list. He could hurt somebody. He could sexually abuse or something. Something could go wrong. So we're not going to take the chance. Like, he cannot come in. And I know that, but I'm also like, oh my God, I get paid not... I don't get paid minimum wage, but I don't make a lot of money. And I can't believe this is my responsibility right now. I can't believe, like, this is happening. And I have to look at a person I don't even know and say, I'm sorry, you got to go. And I wasn't even really sure of the procedure because it was like, you know, it's like when you work a job and you talk about what happens if, like, there's an active shooter, what happens if, you know, someone falls down on the ground and you have to, like, give CPR, like, you talk about all these what ifs, but they never happen. And suddenly this what if is actually happening, and it's not, thank God, not having to give somebody CPR, because I might have to do that one day, and it fucking sucks that I might have to do that one day. Also, I mean, I pray to God. Is that true? No, I don't really, but I really want to never have to deal with active shooter anything. Thank you. That's what I want. Let's just focus on what I want, not what I don't want with that. I would like to have gun-free spaces where everyone is happy and bulletless. Thank you. That's great. But this was still very uncomfortable. I don't know if I would say it's traumatic, but I was very uncomfortable. And I guess what I was supposed to have done was hand him this letter that's pre-typed out. I'm supposed to take it out of the file, write his name on top, and hand it to him. And it basically says, like, you're not allowed on any property of the Y anywhere. And if you think this might be a mistake, you can contact, like, you know, administration or whatever. And it gives contact information for who he can talk to. And if you're not sure if it's a match, if you're, you know, you can still give the letter and say, like, this might be not correct, but, like, we have to take precautions. So, like, you know, you're going to have to leave until we can figure this out, because I can't be sure this isn't you right now. All of that is just, like, I was almost lucky because I was sure it was him. If it was a not sure situation, oh, how fucking awkward would that be to say, like, is this you? And the guy's like, No, that's some other guy. And you're like, I think it's you. And he's like, no. Look at that. The guy has a mustache. I don't have a mustache. Yeah, I think he shaved it off. No. I don't even own a razor. Come on. Let me in. I mean, just, oh God, right? Ugh. So that happens. And it just brought up a lot for me, okay? It made me feel a lot of things. And honestly, like, I'm glad I had mixed feelings about the whole scenario, because had I just, I just felt like I was encountered. Okay, so when I turned to higher ups administration about him there and being like, we need to call this guy, because my big boss was like, yeah, we're gonna call him and tell him he's not allowed to come back. And I was like, okay, good. That's who should be taking care of this, because, like, you get paid a lot more than me, and you can call him. You're not standing right in front of him, in front of his face. Like, you can call him and explain to him he cannot come back. That I would be better at calling somebody and not having them be in the building where they could fly off the handle and act however. You know, I don't know. People are crazy sometimes. I don't think it's great to be confrontational with customers in customer service, because I think that they, it can cause a scene, and a scene that you don't want to have in your business a lot of times. And it could become an unsafe environment for workers and guests and members alike, you know. So, like, it really is best to handle that. Maybe administration calls them over the phone, handles it, and that's what happened, and it was great. So, I felt that administration was like, you did great. This is good. And they didn't share anything personal about it. They didn't make it a witch hunt. They didn't make it anything. They're just like, this is the policy. This person's on the sex offenders list. They're not allowed back, period. There was nothing cruel about it. It was just like, this is our policy. We have to protect children. And that was all good. Now, some of my coworkers were almost like, some of them acted like the guy had the plague. Some of them acted like, and none of my coworkers knew any of this was happening while it was happening. The guy left and then I told them because I was handling it quietly and I contacted my bosses and they knew, but no one else knew. And then I told everyone. Well, not everyone, but I didn't tell any of the members. I told some of my coworkers. And some of the people I told about it were, they kind of acted like he had the plague. Some of them, one of my coworkers decided to tell me a story about how he had a pedophile living across the street from his house and everyone in the neighborhood hated the guy. And one day he was walking down the street and my coworker's wife was like, you better stay away from my house or I'm going to put two in your chest and one in your forehead. And I'm going in my house right now to get my gun. And when I come out, I better not be able to see you or you're dead. And then she went in the house and the guy left. And I was just like, oh my God. Like, oh my God. Like, I know how quickly people can dehumanize another person. And it's so, I can't help but feel a little bit bad for some of these people. Like, you hear about some people that do just ridiculously terrible things to people and children. And I've wanted to hurt people. I've heard about someone doing something terrible. And I've been like, if this guy were around, I would just shoot him. Like I've felt that, but this whole thing of like, this person is on a sex offenders list and nobody knows why, nobody knows what they did, or they don't know the whole story at all. And there's been no attempt in society to try to like help this person, because I don't know that there's any attempt to try to rehabilitate a person who has committed some kind of sexual crime. I don't know that there is or there isn't, but I'm assuming there's not enough help for people like that. And I just think that like when a person's sick, they need help, you know? If a person breaks a crime, they should go to jail, right? And if they maybe committed the crime because of mental issues, they need mental help. They need something. Maybe they are, it's not that they claim insanity. They claim they didn't know what they were doing. And then we send them to a state hospital or a psychiatric prison or whatever they call it. It's like people make mistakes. People act stupid. People do bad things. People have had bad things done to them. And people need help. And I mean, I think prisons need to be helping people. And I don't think that this person, if they do something bad enough, ever needs to be in society again. I'm okay with that. But they still need help, you know. We're not on this planet to just, like, be good from day one and then we're good. Or, like, quickly fix something so we can get it done as quickly as possible. And then we don't ever have to worry about it again. That's not how life works. Like, we're on this planet to take a really long time to figure out all of our shit. And I think that a lot of us maybe have been on this planet before. And we get many, many chances to try to figure out our shit. And regardless of whether or not that's true, I think we're here in this life to figure out shit and to take our time and to make mistakes and to hurt ourselves and hurt people and then try to be more loving and healing and kinder. And certainly there's some people who have damage, the kind of damage that might be labeled irreparable, but like, can't there be some help for them? You know, like, what a miserable existence if there's a person who was raped or molested or sexually abused or whatever, and then they end up being someone who sexually abuses other people and gets in trouble for it. I don't know what the prevalence of that is. I have heard stories. I think the vast majority of people that are sexually abused do not become abusers themselves. But of the abusers out there, I think you'll find that a lot of them have had some kind of abuse, if not sexual, then like a physical abuse or mental abuse. And they might have some kind of, physical brain damage. I don't know, but that's the thing. Like, if you tell a baby from day one that it's a piece of shit its whole life and make it feel terrible about itself and sad and stressed, and you yell at it and you terrorize it, isn't that not as damaging to their brain than if you just hit them in the head with a hammer? Like, there's physical damage done by the treatment of, you know, like, how everyone around you treats you. Like, your brain forms differently. Your brain works differently when you're constantly bombarded with negativity. And I know that sounds so woo-woo, but it's actually true. It's just true, right? If you're stressed all the time, if you're in fight or flight all the time, you're literally at a higher risk of having like heart problems. You're at a higher risk of having so many different health issues, like high cholesterol, diabetes. Like, it's crazy. It's literally called adverse childhood experiences. They say, what's your ACE score? You know, and if you have a high ACE score or whatever, if you've had a lot of traumatic experiences, especially at a young age, you're more disposed to having these physical health problems later based on how you were treated as a child. I mean, this is real shit. And so I'm not sure how much can be repaired of the damage that's done to the minds of people that would do terrible things to children. But I'd like to think that there is some rehabilitation that is possible. And can you imagine, like, being a guy who is a pedophile, living in a neighborhood, having to tell all your neighbors, hey, by the way, I'm a pedophile. Like, don't worry, I'm not going to hurt you or your family, but I was convicted. I did go to prison. And I don't know, like, would, if you were rehabilitated, would anyone believe it? Hi guys. I literally just interrupted myself. I recorded that like 4 or 5 days ago, what I just said before this moment. And, as I always do, I waited to do research on this at all until, after I recorded. Does that make sense? So I just wanted to like read some stuff that I found on the interwebs. I went to ctmirror.org, and there is an article on here written by, it says, Sex Offender Registry, More Harm Than Good, by Tom Condon. And there's some really good information here about the Sex Offenders Registry. I think I've been calling it a database, but it's just a Sex Offenders Registry. With each state, it's different, but it has been a thing since the 1990s. I was right about that. I'm about to say some stuff about that, and I just wanted to, like, tell you who that's about. So maybe I'll just delete the dumb stuff I said before. It wasn't inaccurate. It just wasn't, you know, it didn't have lots of numbers and facts and statistics in it. Some people think that the registries are flawed. Okay, so there's this idea that, are you just putting anybody that's offended anything sexually, any sexual offense, on this list? Or is it a thing of, like, you're putting people who might reoffend or who might be a danger to society on this list. And there's a difference because there are more often than not people who get put on the sex offenders lists, we'll call them lists, do not reoffend. So it is actually not true that when people say once a pedophile, always a pedophile, there is actually the possibility that people can be rehabilitated. So the myths include the myth that nearly all sex offenders reoffend. The sexual recidivism rates for the 746 sex offenders released in 2005 are much lower than what many in the public have been led to expect or believe. These low reoffense rates appear to contradict a conventional wisdom that sex offenders have very high sexual reoffense rates. This is according to a 2012 Connecticut OPM report. If convicted sex offenders aren't committing the new sex crimes, who is? The answer? Relatives, teachers, coaches, physicians, clergymen, dates, babysitters, or other children. People known to the victim and overwhelmingly first-time offenders. So most sex offenders are first-time offenders. And then I think a lot of times sex offenders, when they get caught, they're like, wow, that fucking sucked, and I'm not good at this, and I probably need help. So I'm not going to tell you that, like, I'm not going to tell you that, I don't actually know how many, but according to some studies, it looks like it's much less of a thing than we thought before. Okay. What are other myths? That treatment doesn't work. This article has lots of information about how part of the reason why people don't recommit is because they have been rehabilitated in some way. So that's really fucking great. And then another myth, let me scroll back up here, is the concept of stranger danger. And I've talked about this before on the podcast, this idea that you got to look out for strangers lurking around. I mean, of course you do. If your kid saw someone like that, of course they shouldn't get into an unmarked van with a stranger who has a puppy dog and candy in the backseat. Of course not. But the, like I just read in a paragraph before, the biggest risk of being sexually offended is from somebody that the child actually knows. So it's not stranger danger, it's relative danger, right? Not just in your family, but just people that are more relative to you and your family. Anyway, that's one thing I wanted to interject myself. I wanted to interrupt myself and tell you those things. This is a really awesome article. You should check it out if you want to know more about that. Let's get back to me talking about this shit a week ago, almost. Like, the fact that people think that they have the right to go and shoot you in the street because you're a pedophile. They don't have that right. Like, if my coworker's wife had shot the pedophile, even if it was in her yard, she would have gone to jail for murder. Because you can't shoot somebody. You can't just, like, shoot a person. I know that a lot of the cops would be like, oh, it was a pedophile. And they might want to say, oh, whatever, it was self-defense. And they might want to try to, you know, they might have their own personal feelings about pedophiles. But it's still illegal to shoot somebody, regardless of what crimes they've committed, you know. And one of the reasons why it needs to be illegal to shoot somebody, regardless of what crimes they've committed, is because there's a lot of people that are falsely convicted of things in this world, and especially in this country. There's a lot of people who are in jail for things they didn't do. And there's a lot of people who are in jail where the punishment doesn't fit the crime. Like, they stole a bag and went to jail for 3 years. They stole a book bag with, like, pencils and paper in it and went to jail for 3 years, basically because they're black. You know, like, that actually happened. Khalif Browder, he didn't even steal a backpack. He was just convicted because somebody said, or he wasn't even convicted. Some guy said, that guy stole my backpack, and the cops arrested him, and he went to Rikers. He went to prison before his trial. And though, you know, for whatever reason, the judge was like, oh, I'm going to go to the Hamptons this weekend. We're going to have to push the trial off. His trial just kept getting pushed off longer and longer. Part of the reason why it kept getting pushed off was because his, the prosecutors were like, we can't find the guy who claims he stole his backpack. And the reason why is because the guy who claimed that Khalif stole his backpack wasn't a citizen of the U.S. And after him and his, like, brother or whatever, like, were like, this guy stole my dude's backpack, he freaked out and went back to his home country, and they couldn't get him for the trial. And for some reason, the judge kept saying, well, that's okay. If you can't find your client, then we'll just, like, push the trial off further and further and further, despite the fact that this person who did nothing is in prison right now. And he was physically abused, mentally abused. He was probably sexually assaulted. A lot of bad things happened to Khalif Browder in prison. And he was in jail for 3 years. He was in jail for somewhere around 1,000 days. And he was abused by both inmates and guards. And for about 2 of the years, he was in jail. He was in solitary confinement, allegedly to protect him, because he kept being abused by inmates and guards. But actually, if it's a fucking punishment. It's not a protection, it's a punishment. He literally fucking went insane in there. Solitary confinement is, like, one of the cruelest and most unusual forms of torture that you can fucking, like, it's like, yeah, all the medieval torture shit we hear about from back in the day is terrible, but, like, it was quick compared to having to sit in a room with nobody to talk to for 2 years. It's fucking insane. They finally let him out. He was never even charged with anything. They just put him in actual prison, and he killed himself. He was so traumatized by prison that he took his own life. And he'd never did anything. So, like, stories like that are very common. And yes, that's more of a race thing than anything. But what is it like? How do you feel about a justice system where that can happen? Where you're just walking down the street and a guy says, that guy stole my backpack, and then you can go to jail. I believe the sex offenders database, the whole idea that we have this, like, list that you can go on. I believe it was legislated by parents of children who had been abused. That is correct. I was right. But let's be more specific. This is our second interjection from me to me. So going back to our article here, and also I wanted to mention that sex offenders, this is one of the only things where there's actually a registry. So, like, you don't have to tell your neighbors when you move into a neighborhood if you beat up your wife or your kids, or if you are a drug dealer, or if you were ever convicted of murdering somebody, or not convicted, but if you were ever charged with murdering somebody. Maybe you were acquitted of those charges, but you don't ever have to talk about that. Or, like, maybe you did something really bad and you went to jail and you served your time and then you're out. You don't have to tell anybody that. You can actually kind of have your record expunged. You do have to, like, tell, I think, future employers or things like that, but you don't have to, like, tell any of your neighbors. Like, you could actually kind of hide out in a way that people can't if they're registered sex offenders. So it's a little weird. It's in a way saying, like, this is an offense that's worse than other offenses. But honestly, like, is sexual abuse worse than physical abuse, verbal abuse, mental abuse? I mean, it's one of those things where it's like, are we going to sit here and try to rank on some kind of scale, like, what abuse is worse? I don't want that job. Like, I think that's ridiculous. It's a waste of fucking time. Abuse is worse than no abuse. It's just bad. And the reason why we have a sexual offenders registry is because in 1994, Congress actually passed the Jacob Wetterling Crimes Against Children's Act. And whenever you have, like, the names of these acts, they're the names of children who actually had really, really terrible crimes done against them, like kidnapping, molestation, rape. And in the case of Jacob Wetterling, he was actually murdered. And the man who they found out murdered him, he'd been watching him, and he was a sex offender. He had previously done sexual crimes to other children, and he was living in the neighborhood of Jacob Wetterling, I believe. And he had made himself, he'd put himself in a position where he could be near children a lot. And so that's really unfortunate, but that's I don't want to call it an outlier, but it is actually, like, not a common thing. I mean, this guy was a serial sex offender, rapist, and then murderer. And I don't know if he killed, I can't remember if he killed other children, but this guy is, I mean, in most killers don't reoffend, you know? Most people that kill someone, like, just fucking lost their shit and snapped, or it was an accident. Or they planned it, but it was just, like, a crime out of, like, rage. Or it's someone they knew, and they lost it, and they had to fucking kill him or whatever. Most killers aren't serial killers. It's just statistically what's true. So anyway, the Jacob Wetterling Crimes Against Children's Act of 1994, it established the Federal Sex Offender Registry and provided guidelines for states to follow suit. Part of it, its requirements are, it requires the states themselves to track sex offenders. They're supposed to confirm their addresses every year for 10 years of their release from prison, or quarterly for the rest of their lives if the person was convicted of a violent sex crime. So that law was followed in 1996 by Megan's Law. That required all states to develop and implement a community notification procedure. Another law, the Adam Walsh Act, passed in 2006, further toughened the registry law, making failure to register a federal crime, a criminal offense, and adding some juveniles as young as 14 to the registry. So it seems, and it sounds like after 1990, what was it, four, that there just kept being, like, you know, amendments to the original stuff, and it just kept kind of tightening and getting just kind of like the society was going like, oh no, this isn't strict enough. This isn't strict enough until it got too strict. And it's actually not fair and in some ways unconstitutional. It says the modern registry, the one we have more today, was created in 1998. And it has toughened up, like I said. The time on the registry was increased to 10 or 25 years, depending on the offense, and life for reoffenders. So if you reoffend, you're on it for life. Those who commit nonviolent sex offenses were added, which is like, you do kind of think, like, okay, there's a difference between violent crime and nonviolent crime. Why were nonviolent criminals added, and why is that public knowledge? Like, where they live and, like, where their families live and shit. Like, can't that just be, like, information that is only available within, like, law people, like cops and shit? Those who commit nonviolent sex offenders were added. Most importantly, the names and addresses of nearly everyone on the list have been made available to the public. Judges can put persons who commit certain crimes, such as sex between an older and younger teen, on a law enforcement only list. So, like, if you're 18 and your girlfriend's 16 and you get charged with statutory rape, that's another really common thing that goes on these lists, guys. And that is not the same thing as the guy that came into the Y the other day. I guarantee you it was not the same deal. I think a lot of these things, it says, it's the publication is the CT Mirror. It's a Connecticut publication. So a lot of this data actually is more about what's going on in Connecticut. But I have no reason to believe that, like, Connecticut would have, like, statistics about this that are just, like, so much different than the rest of the country. Like, I don't know why they would be. A lot of these laws I'm talking about are national or federal laws, so it's not like it only applies to Connecticut. Oh, here's something. People who have been put on these sexual lists, they have a hard time getting jobs. They're only really eligible for jobs that are minimum wage. They can't go back to jobs that they had before they were convicted. They have a really hard time finding places to live. And a lot of these people, they just want to, they want to be rehabilitated. They want to, you know, they made a mistake. They learned from it. They don't want to do it again. And being on this list actually makes it harder for them to rehabilitate, which is, it goes against what we want. It says here, too, that offenders are not the only ones who pay the price when they're put on the list. Their families are. Their families receive threats and harassment. It says here, in some states, vigilantes have killed sex offenders they identified from public registries. And there's a lot of studies that show that these laws don't work. They don't keep anyone safer. They're just ruining a lot of people's lives. You could easily get on this list. And it's not specific. There's not, like, levels of how bad it is. Like, if you're a level one offender who maybe you just, like, for instance, when I was younger, living in Michigan, in my 20s, we would go to the bars. And my friend lived downtown, and the bars were downtown. But they weren't, like, right next door to her house. We'd have to walk, you know, like, 5-10 blocks to get to the bars. And after the bars closed, we'd be drunk, and we'd be walking back to her house, and there was a playground in front of a school. But it was 4 in the morning. It was dark, and we would drunkenly play on the playground. And occasionally, you'd be like, oh, shit, I gotta take a pee. What if I whipped it out to pee on the playground at 4 a.m. in the morning when there's no children anywhere, no one's going to get flashed by my tiny drunk penis. And a cop pulls up and says, what are you doing? You're exposing yourself on a playground in front of a school? And for some reason thinks he's going to get another badge or, you know, fucking Boy Scout honors for taking me in and charging me with, like, something that could possibly put me on a sex offenders list. Now, I know that's very, like, sounds very, like, conspiracy theory kind of shit. And maybe that doesn't happen, but I feel like it does. I feel like I've heard stories. I feel like I've heard a lot of stories of things that are that minor where nobody was hurt becoming, you know, on this list. And then there's stuff where it's really bad. And this person should go to jail forever for the kind of shit that they did. Where there's multiple victims. I mean, there's, like, two ends of the spectrum. Not so bad, and then, like, really, really bad. And then there's a lot of stuff that is in between, obviously. And it doesn't have to be the worst sexual abuse story ever for it to be bad and not okay. Like, any kind of sexual abuse is not good. Any kind of sexual abuse is not good. We're going to stop that there. But, okay, let's say this. Like, when I lived in New York, there was always postings about a guy who exposed himself on the subway or whatever. Like, there was some teenage girls sitting on the train, and this guy came out and, like, showed his penis to them. That's not good. It's really bad. It's really bad. It makes them feel terrible. It could cause that, even just that could probably cause some trauma, some mental trauma to these girls. Yes. But would you say that that's a little bit better or not as bad maybe as like being raped? I would say probably being raped is way worse than that. I've been flashed by people and I don't even remember it until now. I've been flashed dick. I've been flashed butt. I've been flashed a million times in New York. I once saw a guy jerking off in, like, literally the entryway of a Duane Reade, like a pharmacy. I was like, okay. For me, that's me. That's just me. But, you know, I wasn't raped that day. And all of this is, like, I don't even know if it's important to talk about, but I don't know. We can't criminalize people and completely pretend that they're not human, because there's just too much of a history of that in our society, of just removing one's humanity because of what they might have done or what they did or what we pretend that they did or what we're accusing them of doing, despite whether or not we have, like, evidence to prove it. We just have a really bad track record with, like, we just take away people's humanity so often in this country. And it's scary. It's scary how much people will join the witch hunt. How much someone says, pedophile, pedophile, fucking kill the pedophile. And everyone's running out with pitchforks, you know. And I also know that nobody is one thing, you know. And it's really hard to understand that, you know. But, like, Bill Cosby is a terrible sex offender. But there was so much that he did that people loved. And he made so many people happy. And he means so much to so many people. But yet just all around, he means so much to so many people, whether it's good or bad, let's say. For some people, he was Jesus. And for other people, he was Satan. Or whatever, you know, if Satan is the opposite of Jesus. It's just a really hard thing to talk about. And I've talked about it before, where two things can be true. I know people that have done really bad things, and they also are someone that they're just close to me because of how it's always been. I can't divulge more about what I'm talking about, but when somebody you love hurts somebody else you love, I talked about that in one episode, and both things are true. I love this person, and they deeply, deeply hurt someone else I love. How can there be space for both of those things to be true? But there is. I just can't get on. I can't join the witch hunt, you know? Like, I'm fine. And the YMCA is not the place for this person to be rehabilitated. That's not what we do here. There. It's not our job. Our job is to protect the people that are here enriching their lives. You know, doing sports and, you know, physical activity and learning how to just, like, live their lives, you know, in a very healthy way and have fun and, you know, recreate with their family and their friends, you know, without any dangers, right? The YMCA is all about removing dangers. So we eliminate the chances of sex offenders being present. We have a lifeguard for fucking everything. I mean, you can't even touch water without there being a lifeguard in the room. Everything is about safety, and that's okay. And yes, because that might not have always been the case, and they learned their lesson. They learned it well. And I'll say there's a lot of organizations that should have learned their lesson and still don't take precautions to keep people safe. I just need people to know that. I don't know. What did that sex offender do to his victims? Did he steal their humanity? Because I think that's what he did. When you hurt someone that badly, you take away a piece of what makes them human. And when we go on the witch hunt, we can only do that terrible deed of killing the monster or whatever because we've taken away what makes them human and we've told ourselves that they're a monster. Sane people can't hurt other people without first dehumanizing them. And I just don't think it's right. I think that, I'm not saying that there shouldn't be a list. I'm not saying that people shouldn't be on it. There's definitely some people who should be on it. And the fact that, like, it is public knowledge, who's on it is good. I think that people should know if they have small children and there's someone who is a repeat offender of small children. I don't know. If that person's going to recommit those crimes, why are they out? You know, is there not a good enough way to know if this person is going to reoffend? Like, I don't know. There's so much wrong with our justice system. There's so much wrong with our penal system. It's just so hard. I just want to create a dictatorship where I am the dictator and everything is the way I want it to be and everyone's happy all the time and we just like we don't have any bullshit. And everyone who's terrible, today I said it perfectly. I said, wouldn't it just be wonderful if everyone who is terrible would just spontaneously combust? Like the more terrible you became, just the closer you became to just like exploding with like a little, I don't even know how spontaneous combustion happens. It might not even be real, but I really want it to happen to so many people that are just terrible. I don't want to kill them. I want their cells to fall apart on their own. Just every cell goes a different direction all at once and they're just gone. That's what I want. I don't want to have anything to do with it. But again, for me to want that kind of thing to happen to a person, wouldn't I have to vilify them pretty badly? Yes. And you think about it, like I think about Tucker Carlson. If there was ever someone who I wanted to spontaneously combust, it would be him. And I think about, I know that he has a son, and his son goes to school. And I remember one time I heard something about, like, Tucker Carlson's son went to some school where obviously there's, like, intelligent people and probably very, like, liberal-minded people. And he was being, like, bullied because his dad was Tucker Carlson. And it's like, dude, your dad fucking sucks. And you like your dad, so you fucking suck too. Or whatever, I don't know. And I was just like, oh, I don't know. But I'm thinking like somebody loves him. He means good things. He means the world in a good way to somebody. So I hate him and I think he's terrible. I think he does nothing but bad for the world. but for somebody, he is their world. And I can't eliminate or hope that he's eliminated without hurting somebody in the process, you know? And, you know, then you get into that philosophical thing of like, well, would you kill one person to save 100 people? That is the age-old question. In this case, hurt one person by hoping that their father spontaneously combusts so that millions and millions and millions of people can be released from his fucking brainwashing. How about that? So, that's all I have to talk about, guys. I don't know what you guys think. I hope that, I don't know, I hope that you guys can know that, like, doing bad things to people is bad. And when a person does really, really bad things to people, that's really bad. But we can't then go and do bad things back to them. It doesn't answer the question. It doesn't solve the problem. It's unfortunate that they did what they did, and it was really bad. And we need to do everything we can to keep them from doing it more and hurting more people. But we can't kill them. And we can't treat them terribly forever. You know, like, imagine if you lived in a house and every time you walked out of your door, one of your neighbors threatened to shoot you. You know, we can't live in a society where everyone is a judge. We can't all be the judge. We can't all be judges. I mean, yes, we all judge, but like we have to check ourselves because we don't get to decide if a person is guilty or innocent because we're not a judge and we're not on the jury. We don't get to decide what a person's punishment should be for the deeds that they've done. We are not a judge and we are not a jury. And we are not God. And if you truly are a Christian, you should know that there is only one judge and it is God. And so many Christians find that so hard, and Muslims and Jews, they find that very hard to understand. People find that really hard to understand that they are not the judge. And in fact, if you are a judge, you should have to work really, really hard to get there. Way harder than Amy fucking Coney Barrett and fucking Dickbag McDickerson and all the other fucktards that are in the fucking Supreme Court. There's like three that we like, right? I don't know any of their names. I don't know why Amy Coney Barrett is in my head. I think the other one is McGonagall. Who's the alcoholic one who raped a girl in college? McGonagall. I think it's McGonagall. No, it's not. McConnell. Mitch McConnell? No. Come on. Okay, I need Priscilla back. I need my political correspondent, Priscilla Toyota, because I can't remember any of these names. She's so name-droppy. She knows all the names. She's, like, the best with, like, pop culture and, like, K-pop culture and, like, political pop culture. And, like, she just knows all the names and the facts. I sometimes know, like, percentages and figures and statistics. But, like, I never remember names. Anyway, guys, thank you so much for listening. And, again, if you like what you're hearing, please rate, review, and subscribe. And check out our podcast on social media. You can check out the Linktree link in our bio, in our show notes. Not our bio, but our show notes. For links to all of our socials. And of course, email us on Make Sex With Me Podcast if you want to talk about the shit I just talked about. If you have something to say, if you think I'm wrong, or if you're like, hell yes, we need to be more humane to even criminals, you just let me know. And I will be like, hell yeah, I'll fucking read that on the air. Love it. And also, you guys, I hope that you're filling your holes with whatever makes you happy. Goodbye.